All right, Genesis 12, Lent 2. Kind of interesting, last week we did Genesis of the fall in Genesis 2 and 3. So at least we sort of stay in Genesis, and we're sort of the next big step forward here with Abram. Isagogically, you know, you often see Genesis divided between chapter 11 and 12 as though Genesis 1 to 11 is the proto-history or the Urgeschichte, the primeval history, which essentially in critical circles means non-historical history. This is sort of the biblical mythology of the prehistoric times. Be that as it may, with then chapter 12, you kind of get real history. Well, first of all, we don't make a big break between 11 and 12. I think that the story of chapter 12, the story of Abraham, first of all, begins in verse 27 of the previous chapter with the Toledoth statement. But again, the critics are actually sort of sunk by their own torpedoes here because that's the Toledoth stuff is all P, and you're back into the Yahwistic history with chapter 12. So they separate out this thing at the end of 11 and don't see that what you have is a story that really connects up to the Tower of Babel and begins in the previous chapter. Well, that's really not our point here. In any case, we got Abram being called in chapter 12. V'yomer Yahweh El Avram, Yahweh said El Avram. Note he's Avram. He doesn't get his name changed to Avraham until he arrives in the land. Now, by the way, there's one theory I always found kind of interesting. Avram, it means, you know, exalted father or whatever, from Rum. And it's supposed that in some spellings, in certain dialects, those hollow verbs were written with a medial hey. So Raham and Rum are essentially the same name, but in two different dialects. Okay, which in a sense would make the point that God changes his name from Avram to Avraham by not really changing his name, but recognizing that now he's in a different part of the country. He's sort of arrived in the promised land, and he adjusts his name to a different dialect. It's kind of interesting. Yahweh said to Avram, Lech lecha me'artzeka umim moladka umbeith avika. A triple header here. Lech lecha, go with reference to yourself. That's that sort of awkward dative that you don't really need to translate. Lech, of course, is from halak, first yod pattern. Go me'artzeka, from your eretz. And me from your molada in construct or with a suffix moladka. You see the verbal root yalad in there. The molada means the place where your kindred are, where the people have been born from yalad, from your ancestral home, if you will. And from the Beth Avika, and from the house of your Av. This is kind of the narrowest definition of family. We're certainly not to a nuclear family yet. Mom, pop, two kids in a Dodge Caravan. Whatever that thing is. But in a sense, this is the people that sort of reside under one roof that you'd have family dinner with. You note the narrowing here. I think this is significant. From your land, which is the broadest of the three, from your kindred, your sort of ancestral territory, to your more immediate family. And you're supposed to be willing to leave all of them. And now go. El Haaretz Asher Ar Eka. To the land, the specific land, not just any old land. Haaretz Asher Ar Eka. The Aleph is the imperfect prefix with apathak, means it's hifil. The root is third hay, ra'ah. The third hay, of course, is gone. So literally this says, I will cause, direct object, you, to see. Cause to see, hifil of ra'ah. Which I will cause you to see. Which I will show you. And I will asa you, another form of a third hey. This is kal. You'll note the aleph has the I vowel under it. And I will make you, what did I say? Forgot. I will asa you. I will make you l, into, literally, a goy gadol, a big goy. Now, this has always bothered me that he tells Abraham he's going to make him into a big goy. If I'd have been writing this, I'd have used the word am. Of course, I wasn't writing this, and my opinion is quite irrelevant. But why goy? This always bothers me. I mean, the covenant name is much more am. Goy means, kind of big-time, almost left-hand kingdom type people, not right-hand kingdom type people. You can track this. I mean, the next use of this phrase is really Exodus 19:6, where they are to become, that's the kingdom of priests passage, and there they're supposed to be a goy kadosh. And again, that sort of bothered me the first time I saw that. Why goy? Why not an am? But there, at least, goy is qualified by the adjective kadosh. I mean, that's not your normal, everyday sort of goy, but a holy goy. But here it's still a great goy. I think part of this is the same narrowing concept, from land to kindred to family, from any old goy to a holy goy to God's covenant am. We're sort of honing in on the scandal of particularity here. Did I actually say that? And there's also a sense in which Abraham is intended to be a goy, because he needs to be recognized. How can I say this without bringing more confusion? I think Abraham needs to be recognized as a legitimate goy, even in the left-hand kingdom. So people will take notice of him and say, hey, you want to be, we can play in a left-hand kingdom. It's just that we're playing over there with additional information and a different attitude about how reality is constructed from everyone else in the left-hand kingdom. But if you want to call us a goy, that's fine. And Abraham really is a goy, and that gets the attention of other people. It's a little bit of this light to enlighten the goyim, but one way to enlighten the goyim is to meet them on their own terms, at least initially, and say, okay, we can play goy too. I don't know if that makes any sense. I'm sort of thinking through this myself over the years. In any case, you're going to be a big goy. And I will barak you, and I will gadal your shame. I will make great your name, piel. And haye barakah. This is really an imperative. And be a blessing, which is awkward. He says, I'm going to do all this stuff, and be a blessing. Now, syntactically, you can look this up in the grammar books. When you have these sort of cohortatives followed by an imperative, the imperative is a way of showing the result or purpose. All right, we're going to do this, we're going to do that, and the result is so that you are a blessing. Be a blessing. So it's not so much a command as the consequence or the result of everything else he's talked about. And I will barak. Here's a great little, I usually put this one on a Hebrew test sooner or later, because once you get to the peels and puals, here's some great forms to parse. I will barak in the piel, the mibarakeka. Now here's a mouthful. Can you parse that? Mibarakeka. You see barak, it's got a mame prefix. The mame has a schwa under it. That's enough to tell you you've got a piel participle. Then you have the eka at the end with the yod, which is your pronominal suffix attached to a plural noun. So this really means your blessing ones, or the ones blessing you. The your here is clearly the objective genitive. Your blessing ones. And mikalekka, mikalelka, I think I got that right, mikalelka. Similar, pl participle. Interestingly enough, the suffix here, aka, is the pronominal suffix that goes on a singular noun. There's no yod. Now, if you look, there's a flag on the play. footnote says read with some manuscripts, you do have evidence that it's plural as well, which would be the obvious parallel, right? Those who bless you, I will bless, the ones blessing you, and the ones cursing you, the ones cursing you, I will curse. You might check English translations on this one, however. I'm not sure everybody takes it as plural. A lot of English translations read the singular. And it could be just a generic singular, a general. Whoever, singular, whoever curses you, I will curse. One's tempted, perhaps, to read too much into it, that the cursing one is, in fact, singular. In any case, unlike the blessing side, the cursing side uses two different verbs. The one who kalals you, I will arar. Ar or is the kal imperfect of the geminate root, aleph resh resh, arar, which is the strong word for curse in the term really of damn or be cursed, damnatus est. While kalal is really a lighter duty word and means to take lightly, from kal, to be light. So the one who deals with you lightly, I will curse. I mean, it's kind of slam-bam a little harder than you'd expect. But hey, this is serious business. And even taking lightly the person and work of Abraham is not God-pleasing. And Nivraku b'ka kol mishpkoth adama. Nivraku, the Niphal of Barak, b'ka in you, and the subject is all the mishpkoth, all the families. Here's yet another sort of social term, mishpkoth, clan, family, of the adama, will, and now, of course, the great crux, Niphal should simply be passive, be blessed. That's the way the Greek took it. That's the way Paul took it. However, the RSV here tried, I think it was RSV that first tried this great bless themselves, sort of a reflexive sense, and then everyone's got to ask, what the heck does that mean? Chris Mitchell has written the definitive work on this. His conclusion is to translate it this way. All nations, all families of the earth will receive blessing. I think that's very helpful, receive blessing. I think what's more important is that it's all the mishpachot ha'adama. So you have in the goy gadol of Abraham the reminder that this is for all the families of not just an eretz, but of the adama. And my working hypothesis is that adama is a broader term than eretz. Eretz is usually specific land. Adama kind of means the whole earth itself. So we've sort of broadened the horizon, and this is a missions text, so to speak, I think is very clear, that the whole point of focusing on Abraham and even narrowing that focus throughout the biblical history is not that God would restrict his salvation, but through the focus and the particular, everyone will receive blessing. Verse 4, one of the more incredible verses in the Bible, V'yelek Avram, and Abram went. I guess my Bible class paragraph on this is, I'm not sure I would have, right? I mean, this is kind of a call night verse. It doesn't say first he called an 800 number to make sure he had reservations. He didn't have a car rented. He didn't go down to AAA and get a triptych and a map. But God said go, and Abraham went. The narrative, the while consecutive, is pretty consecutive. And Abram went according or as Deber Elal Yahweh, as said to him Yahweh, V'yelek, and he went with him. Lot, and Lot went with him, and Abraham was a ben of 5 years and 70 year. 5 years and 70 year, that's just Hebrew number idiom. 75 years, the son of X years means so many years old, in his tsething, in his yatsaing, infinitive construct of yatsah, in his going out mihiran, from Haran. And Abram took v'yikach from lakach, Sarai, Ishtol, his Ashit, his Ishah. He took Sarah, his wife, and Lot, the son of his Ach, the son of his brother, and all their Rakush, their Rakusham, all their Rakush. Rakush means stuff, movable property, the stuff that you'd put in the U-Haul when you head out. All their stuff, which they had stuffed, note the cognate accusative, all their rakush that they had rakashed, how could we say this? All their acquisitions which they had acquired, something like that. And the nephesh and the personhood which they acquired, here again, asah in the sense of sort of accomplish, in Haran. This would mean the number of the household that he had acquired, servants, domestics, hangers-on, employees, and Yetzau, and they went out, Laleket, to Halak, Artsa, hey directive, landward of Canaan, toward the land of Canaan, and they came Artsa, toward the Artsa of Canaan. V'yavor Avram, and Abram in the that's Kal, passed through in the land, ad makom Shechem, unto the place of Shechem, unto the Elon Moreh, the oak of Moreh, and the Canaanites then were in the land. Now, isagogically, this is an interesting verse, noting that the Canaanites were then, sort of already in the land. And frankly, this oak of Moreh at Shechem was no doubt a pagan shrine. He kind of shows up at a holy place. Not a Yahwistic holy place, but a holy place nevertheless. Okay. Occupied by the Canaanites. And I think half the reason for mentioning the Canaanites is to let you know that Abraham is in a minority here. I mean, he's kind of arrived in, quote, the promised land, but it's not his land yet. Right, he's still a stranger. V'yera Yahweh, Niphal of Ra'ah, and Yahweh appeared to Avram. Interesting, now Yahweh sort of reassures him of his presence, and said, to your Zerah I will give the land, the this one. That's all Abraham needed to hear. To your seed, to your descendant, I will give this land. And what does Abraham do now that he's arrived? He built there a mizbeach to Yahweh, the one appearing in the Niphal, the one letting himself be seen to him. Then 8 is just kind of geography. And he went out from there toward the mountain on the east of Bethel, and he pitched his ohel there at Bethel. From the west, and Ai from the east, and he built there a mizbeach to Yahweh, and he called b'shem Yahweh. This is the idiom for invoke, huh? And he called on, or in, the name Yahweh. I guess we could do the next line too, right? And Abram journeyed. Look at this nice infinitive. Halok v'nasoa ha-negva. Walking and journeying toward the Negev. Hey, directive on Negev, toward the Negev. So 2 points I think that come out in these last verses. One, Abraham starts building altars all over the place. You know, I guess on the one hand, this is obvious. He's sort of giving thanks and worshiping to Yahweh because he's arrived in the land. But it's a little bit also, I think, of kind of claiming the land. This is sort of like, you know, landing in the New World and sticking a flag in the ground. Isaiah comes to the land and says, we're going to worship Yahweh here. But he's moving around, and that's the last verse, you see. He's still kind of unsettled. Remember that throughout his lifetime, Abraham only owns one piece of property, and that is Machpelah, right? He invested in retirement real estate and bought a cemetery lot. But that's really the only thing he actually owned in the land. And it's not until we get to Moses, to Joshua and the conquest, that people actually kind of own the place. Okay, we're doing John now, and I think somehow the connection, yeah, you got way too much to do. Well, I think it's the woman, I think it's Shechem.